Hey, can we turn this podcast into the 10 most annoying minutes of your life with Gary Steinman?
Cast?
Yeah, go.
Okay.
It's Wednesday, October 21st, and this is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode number 197. I'm Evan Lotti, Associate Editor for PC Gamer Magazine, and with me today are, as always, Andy Bauman, Podcast Producer.
We're getting really dangerously close to 200.
Yeah.
Has anybody done any groundwork on, like, what we're going to do? Because I sure as hell have
not. Top secret.
Okay.
Maybe.
As long as someone's on top of it, that's good.
I assure you that we are.
Okay.
And in addition, our capable intern, Prentice Getty.
Hello.
And rejoining the PC Gamer Podcast, PC Gamer Editor-in-Chief Gary Steinman.
Can we get an intern over here to turn off my mute button?
No, I think you can handle it.
Okay. Hello.
Delegation is your strength. All right, guys, so today we're going to talk about, of course, the big news this week was the Modern Warfare announcement that they're not going to be supporting dedicated servers. We're going to talk a little bit about our favorite guns in Borderlands, which is hitting the PC next Tuesday. And we'll wrap up with some interesting news and sales announcements like Assassin's Creed being $5 on Steam. But before all that, we want to give you guys a rundown of what games are coming out between now and next Tuesday. And those include Borderlands, of course. We've got World of Zoo. We've got something called Press Your Luck 2010 Edition, which kind of sounds like a, like some sort of game show game. And CSI Deadly Intense. I got to play a little bit of that. It had what's the guy's name? Morpheus from The Matrix?
Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. He was solving puzzles and things like that. Anyway, so Borderlands is certainly the one to look out for next week. It's getting a lot of buzz, already out on console this week. And you can look for the review in our holiday issue, which is also going out to subscribers. Am I correct on that, Gary, this week?
Yeah, it's starting to ship today, so subscribers will be getting it anytime within the next few days. We've got some really cool stuff in the issue to go along with our really in-depth Dragon Age review, which we had Deslock handle for us. We had the team at BioWare put together an exclusive level that will only be on the PC Gamer disc that actually extends the lore. It's part of the Dragon Age universe, and we're really excited to have that on our DVD. So if you're not a subscriber, look for it on newsstands a few weeks later. It's got a lot of must-reads, but it's got some great must-have stuff on the disc, too.
It's certainly a proper holiday issue, if I do say so myself. We've got our annual gift guide in there, and we're giving shout-outs to our favorite Nerf guns, and
lots of pictures of ourselves.
Throwing money around.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always a good bonus, I think, to any issue.
Super great issue.
All right, so I sort of want to have you guys honing on this issue almost as like a family meeting about what we think about the Modern Warfare 2 announcement this week, which came on another podcast. It wasn't like a big reveal or anything, but it sort of became big news when predictably there's a petition that came out of this announcement. So just to break down the facts, first of all, the community manager, Robert Bowling, for Modern Warfare 2 mentioned on another podcast earlier this week that the game would not have dedicated server support. What does that mean? That means that, you know, if you're playing a game like Team Fortress 2 or Counter-Strike, pretty much any PC shooter, that's kind of the genre that uses dedicated servers most, you will not have the ability to either go to a hosting service and purchase, sort of for a monthly fee to host your own server and put your own files and maps and mods and other tweaks to that, nor will you have the ability to sort of locally host your own server through your own computer. Instead, Infinity Ward is introducing something called IWNet, which they haven't completely explained what it is or how it will, what it'll look like, what the user experience will be. But from what we understand from comments made by the same community manager on his own blog, which you can find at 402.com, basically they're sort of rolling out a Xbox Live type multiplayer matchmaking service in place of dedicated servers. So in other words, that means you can sort of create your own playlists, I guess, for the game. You can say, you know, I want to play this map or this mode, in a specific order, and the game will automatically take you to different servers that facilitate that. Or you can have like a party-based system where you and a certain number of friends can jump together and you sort of stay together between servers or between matches. And in place of dedicated server hosting, there will be private matches, which will allow you to set your own rules and boot people from matches and change the map and things like that. So it's not to say that it's an experience seemingly that will completely, you know, eliminate any choice, but it's a big deal to a lot of people. There's already been 127,000 signatures against the removal of dedicated server hosting in the game.
It asked for them to review the decision. It wasn't a boycott or anything. It just said, please review your decision.
Right. But there's been 127,000 signatures. And just, again, it's not a boycott, but to compare it to the Left 4 Dead 2 boycott, which had about 41,000 members at its peak. So pretty rapid support and people concerned about this issue in a brief amount of time. And I want to ask you guys if you're concerned about it as well.
I just don't understand the decision. It seems to fly in the face of everything that the PC gaming community, that PC gamers like in a multiplayer game. You know, we like to be able to customize. We like to be able to build our mods. We like to have more control. We like to do things that you can't do on console. And I don't know what benefit it is to them to do it this way. I mean, maybe someone could clarify that for me.
The community manager, Robert Bowling, his kind of statement was, and this allows us to have a smoother experience where things aren't as fractured. I mean, they're sort of making the argument, if I'm understanding correctly, that having a lot of dedicated servers doesn't allow them to control the multiplayer experience and deliver the kind of multiplayer experience they want in terms of, I don't know, balancing and cheat control and mods, I guess, that they feel like they don't want to prioritize modders and tuners, as they called them, over just the overall experience.
But again, those who want that kind of controlled experience can seek it out on the console, and the two aren't mutually exclusive. There are plenty of PC gamers who are also console gamers, and if they're looking for a more controlled, developer-driven multiplayer experience, they can, you know, play it on their PlayStation, on their Xbox. Nobody's saying that you can't do that, but people are turning to this on the PC because they are able to bring a little bit of chaos, a little bit of anarchy, a little bit of their own homebrew sensibilities to it, a little more freedom. And it extends the experience and gives it a kind of longevity legs that it doesn't necessarily have on console. It just seems like an odd decision to me.
It is. I mean, I'm still giving it the opportunity to be a good system. I mean, this is certainly not the right way to roll out this kind of announcement, you know, on a Call of Duty fan sites podcast. I mean, considering they had to know this would generate some amount of either controversy or backlash, you know, not having dedicated server support. And I think the way to introduce this idea and really sell people on this would to, you know, be, say, roll out a video and just show us how the playlist system works, how the party system works, why we should be interested in it. Because, I mean, frankly, there is a side of me that says, you know, maybe I kind of like the idea of having a game, you know, a major multiplayer game where I can just sit down, push a button, and it'll sort of take me in and you know, take me through the kind of experience that it thinks is fun for me, and that I don't have to do as much searching and you know, finding my friends and what server are they on and whatnot. It's a nice idea, but I have no, you know, without knowing how it works, without seeing it in action, you can't help but be kind of skeptical.
It's odd that he kind of nonchalantly just mentioned this on somebody else's podcast. It's odd they didn't do that through, you know, you think they do an official press release or something to, but I don't know.
Okay, so again, just to bring in a couple more comments from Infinity Ward themselves, just to see what kind of design decision they brought to this. Game Informer had a quick chat with the guys at Infinity Ward, including Jason West, who said, "We're just prioritizing the player experience above the modders and the tuners. We thought maybe it would be cool if the fans could play the game," he laughs. And that's kind of, I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's, I don't know how to interpret that. I don't know the tone that he spoke that in, but if, I feel like I'm being talked down to in that case that like, oh, PC gaming is so difficult and, you know, server browsers are so impossible to use that, you know, we need to make this very accessible for people. I know, I don't feel that way. I mean, PC gamers are so smart and they understand how systems work and they're interested in how systems work that, I don't know. I know, Prentice, you had something else to say about that, those comments.
Yeah, well, Game Informer had, I mean, that quote's from the Game Informer article where it's a news story and its headline is Infinity Ward Responds to PC Fanboys' Dedicated Server Woes. And it's like, well, right there, there's two things. You know, it's first off, he quotes, who's it, Adam West? Was that his? Or Jason West in the article. And they never call anyone a PC fanboy. So right off the bat, Game Informer is basically representing Infinity Ward in a bad way, saying that they called us PC fanboys, even though they didn't. And secondly, I mean, that's just completely inflammatory to us. But he says that, you know, oh, we thought it would be cool if people could play. But the problem with Call of Duty 4 was that it relied on Punkbuster and a terrible server browser. And they said in this press release, you know, oh, we're going to have VAC instead. But I mean, why do they have to do this IWNet instead? I mean, VAC should clear up, you know, the problems with Punkbuster. So I really don't see the need for a matchmaking system.
Right. I mean, I totally back you that Punkbuster is, I mean, I didn't play multiplayer on PC. I played a lot on Xbox because of Punkbuster. I thought it was a terrible system. I mean, it's basically spyware that you're installing in order to run the game on PC and multiplayer. It's terrible. But yeah. I mean, if one of the things naturally that I think, you know, but by sort of containing the multiplayer, by keeping an eye on everybody, by keeping them all within the same system and not having people run their own servers, what that means is they're going to be able to sell map packs to people, which they've done in the past with World at War and the previous Call of Duty, Modern Warfare. That seems like a good incentive for the system. I'd like to think that overall the experience will be better than something like Punkbuster, which annoyed the hell out of me again. But I don't know. I just don't buy into their argument that people weren't playing the game. It wasn't easy enough, you know?
Yeah. And going on in this, Game Informer, story, he says, and, credit to, GHST for NeoGAF, cause I'm going to read his bolded parts, but they said in the article, and this is the writer talking, predictably, nerds across the world took to the internet with the wailing and gnashing of teeth that would make the Left 4 Dead community proud. However, and this may shock some gamers with advanced persecution complexes, this move was not made to tweak the noses of the PC community. And then he goes on to quote West, who says, it's a little dubious. Some of the people complaining are complaining with their pocketbook. And it's like, well, okay, nobody's complaining with their pocketbook. First off, there was a $10 price hike out of left field. And secondly, in the article, he says, you know, well, the petition wasn't inflammatory. It was completely, I mean, all it said is, please review this decision.
And yeah, it wasn't a reactionary boycott, like you just said. Yeah.
And maybe it should have been full of grammatical errors and spelling errors, and Infinity Ward would have done something, but it was completely respectful. So, I mean, it's really annoying to see, number one, Infinity Ward not taking it seriously, and then number two, this article being completely inflammatory to, I mean, any PC gamer.
I'd agree with that. I mean, I think the group we haven't mentioned yet is the competitive gaming community as well, which I'm not sure how big of a competitive gaming community there is for the Call of Duty series, but being a massive, you know, multiplayer game, a very mainstream multiplayer game, I should say, it's got to be fairly big. And I know I talked to one of the Team Pandemic guys, one of the big professional gaming clans out there, and he'd sort of complain about the first game that, you know, Activision never really rolled out a lot of support to let us tweak certain configurations and, you know, match settings and remove perks and things like that. But I've got to think they more than anybody, especially clans that are established Call of Duty clans, are upset about not being able to host their own servers and just have a place. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's what servers are more than anything. It's not about, you know, adding a certain setting or, you know, lowering the gravity or something. It's a place. It's
a
the
community
bar, you know,
based thing.
It's the place where everybody knows your name and you come in there and, you know, you're shooting the same guys, you have a couple rivals or something, and it's this story that develops over a few months, and you get to know people and you meet people, and that's,
and it's not fanboyism. I mean, that's how our platform works. That's how it's worked for ages, you know, and to completely change that. I mean, that's like taking, you know, the marketplace out of like Xbox Live or, you know, something drastic like that. I mean, it's not just a minor tweak. And he responds in the article saying, oh, we don't want to bifurcate the community by splitting it in two halves. But I mean, how would that split it in two halves if you have a quick match system where you can jump in and play with anyone, or instead having, you know, if you want to use a server browser and go to your server, why not have both? I don't think that split the community at all.
That's fair to say. I mean, I definitely agree with you, and I'm just frankly surprised by it. I mean, it's more offensive to me. I don't know if offensive is the right word than StarCraft not having LAN play that we talked about a few months ago. And yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's natural to take it to this next step, but Infinity Ward does owe a lot of their success to PC gaming. I mean,
yeah,
the original Call of Duty games were excellent games, and we loved them and we enjoyed them, and PC gamers bought them. And I mean, our multiplayer space should not be a second thought, should not be, you know, it should be its own experience and something valuable. And hopefully it will be that, you know, I'm certainly waiting to give it that fair shot and waiting to see what IWNet is. And, you know, I'm certainly interested in things like persistent stat tracking, and it will bring prestige mode, which was something that was lacking that a lot of console gamers enjoyed about the game. But yeah, we'll see how it turns out, I guess. And another bright news, I forgot to mention that Modern Warfare 2 will not be delayed on PC. So it will be launching on the 10th of November next month. All right, so as we mentioned at the start of the podcast, Borderlands is coming out on PC next week, next Tuesday on the 27th, and we're all looking forward to it. You can see the review in our holiday issue. Gary and I have spent a great deal of time with it, and we know one of the big features about the game that 2K has marketed a lot is the enormous, you know, bajillions of guns in the game. And so I thought it'd be fun to sort of have Gary and I go back and forth on what guns we like, what enemies we like, what specific kind of effects and experiences that surprise us in the game. And I'll start off by saying, so there's like an elemental RPG system in the game, in that, you know, weapons can have elemental effects attached to them. So I guess that means there's a shock elemental, there's explosive, there's
fire, there's lightning,
fire, yeah. Lightning, yeah.
Corrosive. Yeah.
The corrosive is one of the best, like, death effects I've seen in the game in a long time. So it's basically acid. Like, it adds acid to your bullets, which is, first of all, like, an excellent concept in that it can apply to anything, like rockets. Like, I have acid rockets, or I have an acid shotgun. But it's sort of randomly produced. Like, it's not all of your bullets that are dealing acid damage. But, you know, if you successfully kill an enemy with the effect, they melt in this pile of, like, amazing fluorescent green goo, and they sort of like flail about as they, it's kind of like the witch in Wizard of Oz, honestly. That's what it reminds me of. And just having that produced over and over again, and this sounds pretty terrible, but like killing midgets and having them melt in the piles of green goo. it doesn't get much better than that.
It's a really satisfying game. One of the things that I've been saying a lot around the office is it's not necessarily a great game, but it's a really great, good game. I mean, nothing about it is, you know, going to change your life, but altogether, it's this kind of game that you find yourself continually playing. I had this weird bout of insomnia last week, so I kept waking up at 3, 4 a.m. and playing it for 4 hours before I went into work. It doesn't require a lot from you. So, you know, you get to just go in and play. I don't quite get the, I mean, I do get, but I don't quite get the comparisons to Fallout, other than the fact that they have RPG elements, or they're RPGs, or they're very different kinds of games. You get to go in and you just get to shoot things and get more loot, and then shoot things again and get more loot. There's a rudimentary skill tree. It does change how your character develops, but it's very simple to move points around. And if you don't like how you spec your character, you could respec it for respec her or him for a small fee. But yeah, I mean, the gun lust is phenomenal. It's a really great motivator, more than the story. And sometimes the surprises you get, I've never been a, you know, I'm not the most skilled shooter guy. I like shooters, but I'm never going to be a competitive player. So I never thought I'd like precision guns until I started playing this game. And it really turned me on to these powerful, but you have to aim them because you've got only 6 bullets. The revolvers really got me really excited. Once I got my first really powerful revolver with shock damage, and I'm lining up shots and just blowing people to bits with one perfect shot. So in that regard, yeah, I love the guns, and I love how it's turned me on to using guns in different ways than I typically use as a shooter person. So yeah, I'm a revolver guy all the way now.
Very nice. I'm glad to hear the game converted you. I love that phrase "gun lust" that you use, because I almost think like it, I mean, the comparison to Diablo and other, you know, sort of accumulative loot based RPGs is clear, and that's already been made. But in that sense, I think one of the best things about Borderlands is it's a student of other successful games. Mm-hmm. You sort of have this, I won't give it away, but there's a interesting element to the story that evokes part of BioShock, and there's even a nice hat tip to BioShock within the first few minutes. One of the phrases the characters uses, you have a little bit of the comedic relief and the class-based elements of Team Fortress, mm-hmm. that, you know, creates that familiarity of a soldier class and rocket launchers, and you have the Claptrap character, which is the comedic relief, I guess. And you sort of have the setting or the openness of Fallout to a lesser extent. And this is an interesting one, I think. You have the low-gravity jump of something like Halo, which does a lot, I think. It's kind of an underrated element to a game in that, you know, when you're jumping and you're just the ability to be in the air longer lets you sort of mitigate certain dangers. It lets you, you know, navigate the world a little bit better. You can reach certain cliffs. And it just gives this feeling of I don't know, there's a little bit less pressure in the game. And I think, and I love the fact that the guns are balanced in a way that they're pretty generous, right? I mean, you're not getting high tier weapons every second, but you're getting them every half hour, you know, at the least. You're getting stuff you can sell for a lot of money, and you can accumulate a lot of cash and buy new stuff. And you have these sales at the
vending machines. Yeah,
the vending machines that go on every like 15 or 5 minutes or something, that are only available for that certain amount of time. You can pick them up, and I don't know, just the feeling of accumulation has been great for me. But back to the weapons, I think I haven't tried out too many of the sniper rifles yet, but I've been really interested in the rocket launchers more so, that have some interesting firing effects. There's I have a rocket launcher that fires 3 rockets every time I pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have one that sort of, it's hard to describe, like it fires in this like helix configuration, where basically I fire this like circular shape of 3 rockets that spins en route to its destination, to its target. So it allows me to sort of not be as precise with my shots, is what I'm saying.
Right. You could clear out a room basically, or clear out an area really quickly and really efficiently and in a really satisfying way. It make those rocket launchers have this big booming sound and feel. Yeah, I love the rocket launcher. I played around a little bit with the sniper rifle as well. You do need to have at least a sniper rifle or a rocket launcher, because there are some enemies that are either, you know, up on cliffs or far away that you'll want to take off from a distance. But yeah, like you, I wasn't sure. I'm not doing much with the sniper weapons, but you do need one of those, and I thought I'd use it more, but I ended up gravitating more toward the rocket launcher for my distance attacks. And they are satisfying. I also have one that shoots 5 rockets at a time in a wide burst with explosive effects, and it's just so nice when it just clears out an area.
I just love the idea that it creates this sort of water cooler conversation. I hope you guys, you listeners, share what weapons you find, what weapons you enjoy in the game with us next week. And as you're playing it, sort of as like treasure that you found that you're sort of sharing with people. And, but yeah, I definitely agree that you, if you're soloing, or if you're playing, you know, with just another person, I guess one of you guys has to certainly have a sniper rifle on hand. And I was flipping through the strategy guide that you got in the mail, Gary, and I'm hoping I can find this at some point, but there's a rocket launcher. Let me see if I can describe this well. So as you fire the rocket, it continuously explodes on route to its target. Mm-hmm. So in other words, it's exploding every second that it's in the air. It's continually exploding. So conceivably, you could sort of fire it, you know, over the ear, over the shoulder of some enemies, and it would hit them on the way. I just never even heard of anything like that. It was a really cool idea. It just shows how imaginative they were with their weapons, I think.
Even the grenades, you have a slot for grenade mods. And as you level up and as you get into more advanced areas and you get better loot, the grenade mods not only let each grenade do more damage, but they could radically change how your grenade functions. Some of them warp your grenades to your destination. Others make them bounce around. Others make your grenades shoot out mini grenades.
Yeah, proximity.
So, I mean, that's fantastic too. And everything that Evan and I are saying, they're not necessarily original ideas, but to have it all in one setting, executed well, in a way that's so satisfying, really makes it a fun game. And like I said earlier, it doesn't require a lot from you. So you could just get in and start having fun right away and blasting things. If you're not the most skilled shooter person, you could always just go take some side quests and level up and clear out an area later. If you are a precision, really highly skilled player, you could really leverage that and take advantage of that to wander into more advanced areas and test your skills. So, I mean, I like that it's that kind of game that almost anybody could like.
Well, Evan, let me go back to what you were talking about talking about the game with people, and I wanted to get your take. I'm sure you guys had the chance to sort of play it together, co-op. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Did you guys find that, because the core focus of the RPG is just the looting and stuff, and like having an inventory and loot, you want to sit there and kind of like look through your booty and see what's going to do damage and stuff. Do you feel rushed when you play it with other people? Like, oh crap, I can't like sit here and look at my stuff. I got to keep going.
I definitely know what you're talking about. I've had that experience with Titan Quest a lot where it's sort of detracted. You know, I've gotten a group of six players together.
Yeah, you feel bad for like lagging behind, you know?
Yeah, for like savoring the rewards that are inherent in the game. Right. I think that exists in Borderlands. But at the same time, there's this nice, I mean, in the same sense that you can do with Diablo or a game like Diablo, there's a little bit more trading going on, I feel like, where we were playing with Norm and Will Smith from MaxPC. You know, he'd find an SMG. I mean, basically, you have weapon specializations, right? I mean, everybody has one or two weapon specializations that they sort of stick to, and, you know, Norm's the SMG guy and Will's the rocket guy. And you find these items, and you're like, hey, well, I could keep this for myself, or I could throw it to Will, and, you know, we just opened a weapon cache. Let's see what's best for who. And there's a little bit more of a sense of like communal sharing in that way. It's kind of unfortunate that they didn't share ammo, where everybody's picking up their individual ammo and whatnot. I guess maybe they didn't know how to transfer that between single player and multiplayer, but I mean, that's certainly there and certainly something to look out for. But I think if you're with a group that's patient, that can play the game at a similar pace and have a similar mindset, then you'll be okay.
Cool.
And it's not relentless in the sense that you're not, it's not wave after wave of people as you move forward. You'll clear out, you know, a sub area, and then you start picking up loot. So you catch your breath and you have that time to pass weapons around, and then you'll move forward a little bit, and then you wander into another group of enemies. So yeah, you have that kind of time. And
I was wondering about that too, because I've heard, you know, that there's a respawn, there's like a mob element, sort of like an MMO style. Where like,
yeah, but they don't respawn when you're standing there, and they tend not to respond right away. You'll as you move forward, you could go back and still see the bodies there, and so they don't respawn right away. You have to get, I think you have to get a significant distance away.
Oh, cool.
For them to respawn, or at least in my experience, that's the case.
Yeah, I actually found that part to be very well balanced
That's good.
The quantity and difficulty of encounters. For whatever reason, I mean, we'd encounter enemies that are, I mean, enemies that are like two levels or three levels higher than you are actually very, very difficult usually in terms of the amount of hit points they have. But just the fun of sort of saying, okay, guys, everybody focus on this guy. And you pile tons and tons of damage. I mean, maybe a, I don't know, like a, I'm trying to think of the specific class of enemies, but, you know, again, like if an enemy is like two or three levels higher than you, that means everybody has to put like two or three of their magazines into them and do, you know, a few critical hits along the way, maybe do some DOT to take them down. And those are just sort of uncommon level enemies, not even bosses or mini bosses, but it was extremely fun. I mean, in comparison to a game like Titan Quest or Diablo, where if that was the case, you'd all just be sort of crowding around an enemy and mashing the, you know, mouse one until they've dropped.
And another thing that actually helps with the balance or the lightness and fun, something that Dan Stapleton mentioned prominently in his review, is the second win feature, where when you get killed, you, like in Left 4 Dead, you could fire off a few more shots, and if you kill somebody while you're in, while that ticker's ticking down, you get that second win. Your shield is, your health isn't fully regenerated, but your shield is fully regenerated. And you get back into the action. So you could kind of strategically set yourself up. So if you're fighting a big boss and there are a lot of sub characters just running around creating chaos at the same time, you could set yourself up so you could run in and take a lot of damage and fire a lot of hits. And then, you'll end up getting killed, but then you could take out a smaller, critter to the left if you kind of plan it properly and get that second win, use the second win as a strategic element. In a way that doesn't feel cheap. It just actually is really fun.
Yeah, I kind of found myself getting into these like alley-oop situations, so to speak, where I go down, but, you know, say Norm would be next to me or Dan would be next to me, and we'd say, okay, you know, we'll shoot this guy, but I'll leave him with a sliver of health so I can take a shotgun shot at him, and then that'll allow me to get back up and, you know, get out of being incapacitated. It was pretty cool.
And it's a great strategy for solo too, because I've done a lot more solo than co-op right now. I'm actually waiting to do some co-op with Josh, who is equally as modestly skilled at shooters as I am. And I've used it a lot in solo play. Exactly what you said. You know, I'm up against a boss that's going to really challenge me. I'll take some of his little critter army and weaken them, but not kill them, because I know I'm about to die, and then I'll have them in gunshot range to resuscitate myself when the time comes.
It's a cool mechanic. And we should mention as well that the first DLC for Borderlands has already been announced, got announced last week. It's called the Zombie Island of Dr. Ned. Of course it's zombies, right? Of course, that's the big thing in every game these days. And let's see, on Microsoft, So on Xbox Live, it's going for 800 points, which equates to 10 bucks. I guess we'd expect the same on PC. It will be on PC, of course. And 2K's calling it a full-fledged expansion, but I'm sort of doubting that and thinking it's just going to be sort of a section of the game with new enemies, with new zombie enemies that I don't think actually existed in the campaign. I haven't encountered them, if that's the case. But yeah, Dan just let me know that there are no zombies in the campaign. And so yeah, certainly looking forward to that. Not sure what date to expect for that, but pretty soon, apparently.
Well, let me ask you guys. I mean, you guys talked about the whole game without talking about the look of the game. As in its final state, like, is it?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, that was the most exciting thing that we had revealed in our cover story, maybe 6-7 months ago, 8 months ago. It's pretty phenomenal. Dan said it in his review, it's one of the best looking games of this nature, of this sort, that he's seen in recent history. And I think I'd wholeheartedly agree. It's stylistic. It's, it works. It's consistent. I love it. I think it's great.
I think more broadly, if we're talking about presentation as a whole, it's almost something I wish there was more of in the game, where you meet that the doctor character near the beginning, and he's sort of introduced with this big splashy introduction, little mini cinematic, and then he's just kind of a cardboard cutout. He just kind of stands there, and that's kind of true of a lot of the other characters, and even your own characters. I wish I mean, their VO even. I mean, other characters' VO. When characters talk, it's good. It's entertaining. It has some personality to it. It's well written, I think. But there isn't that much of it.
And yeah, that's where the game kind of falls off a cliff a little bit. It puts its best foot forward early, mm-hmm. with some really great character development in the, you know, the secondary characters that are helping give you quests and move the story along. And you expect it to maintain it, and pretty quickly that goes away.
Yeah, it's certainly not a major thing. I mean, I sort of gravitate to what TF2 does in giving characters this fantastic background and personality and voice, and that's certainly lacking in sort of the class-based characters Borderlands has, but it's not the end of the world. Ultimately, it's about the gameplay. It's about accumulating tons of guns and playing with your friends, and that's pretty rock solid, I think we're happy to say. With that, let's move on to our weekly questions segment.
Hello, PC Gamer crew. This is Canoe Grove from Waterloo, Ontario again. A quick question for you about the game Defense Grid: The Awakening. I thought it was an awesome game. I had a lot of fun with it. I was wishing there was a way to play it multiplayer, or if I could contact the developer with an idea and see if that was something that they would ever be interested in, just pass on my thoughts. And wanted to know if you guys had thought about what the game mechanic would be like if one person could play as the attacker and build up with their points some different units. Another person would play, obviously, as the defender in the game that we have now. And you could switch it up and just play as a co-op multiplayer, or play as a attack and defend. Thought it would be a great idea. Let me know your thoughts, guys. Thanks.
Well, that's certainly a neat idea. It would be an interesting way for them to iterate on something that's been pretty successful. I think I'd like to think Defense Grid was a successful game. As far as contacting the developer directly, I know most developers actually say on their contact pages, you know, they don't accept submissions, and they can't for legal reasons, obviously, where if they were to implement an idea that sort of resembled something that somebody mailed to them at some point in time, then, you know, it makes sense. But I'm sure you could visit their forums at defensegrid.hiddenpath.com/forum and drop them a line there, let them know what you think, and I'm sure they'll read it. I mean, I love the guy's idea that something like an asymmetrical attack and defense game would be kind of fun.
Has that been done in the tower defense format?
Not that I know of. I mean,
I can't think of one either, but I agree. That is pretty cool.
I mean, even if it were as simple as somebody was just choosing what types of enemies to, you know, the order of what enemies they wanted to send forward, and maybe having a couple little abilities to throw down, that'd be pretty fun and be pretty good.
Hey, what's going on, PC Gamer Podcast? Dr. Leet from Virginia. I got a quick question for you about first-person shooters, particularly shotguns in them. I'm just wondering, out of all the first-person shooters, shotguns seem to be a pretty prominent weapon. Out of all of the first-person shooters you've played, what's your favorite game shotgun? Personally, mine's either Quake 2 or anything from the Doom, you know, where you get that nice beefy sound as well as the knockdown power you're looking for. Anyway, keep up the good work, and I love the podcast. Take care.
Love that he called the sound beefy, especially with Quake. I think that actually lines up well. Man, I don't know. From Borderlands, I had a corrosive shotgun I was rolling with for like 10 levels that just melted people, melted fools. That was good.
I actually, I like, there's this enemy class, they're midget shotgunners, and I really like how when they shoot their shotguns, they'd fall over backward. It was really kind of this like subtle comedic element. I'm not answering his question, but it was a subtle comedic element in the game. They'd run up and fire their shotgun and fall over backward, and that would be the perfect time to start, you know, emptying your clip into them.
Those guys are amazing because they have that little like high-pitched voice, right?
Yeah.
So you feel like you're fighting babies.
And they're really, it's not a scary game by any stretch, but there was once or twice where I actually jumped where I thought I was in a clear area, and these like a pair of midget shotgunners just ran out of nowhere and just started running at me. it was pretty awesome.
What do you think, Prentice? What's your favorite shotgun?
I have no idea, honestly. There's so many and can't pick one.
I'd probably throw, I think it's the, it's like the X7 or the M7 from Counter-Strike Source.
Oh, yeah.
That's the pump shotgun, not the auto shotgun. I mean, that thing is pretty, especially in Source, it's really generous with headshots at medium range, and you can feel pretty good about yourself if you run around with that thing.
Quake 3 had a pretty good one.
I don't like the way the weapons look in Quake 3 from first-person perspective, especially the rocket launcher. I know they're staying true to the way it looks, but it looks like this weird, like, triangular tube. Shark fin thing.
Yeah.
When I pick it up, it doesn't say what it is to me, you know, without reading it on the screen.
I like the shotgun in Max Payne because you could, like, see each pellet coming out of it, and you just know that when you get a hit with every pellet in the guy, it's, like, over.
Yeah.
That was so much fun. That was like one of the first, you know, this is the first game that really let you see what the difference between a shotgun and like a normal weapon is, you know.
Definitely. You learned a lot about ballistics from that game.
Yeah, for real.
A dangerous amount. I mean, I guess we could, if we wanted to broaden the definition, we could throw the flak cannon into here with the ability to, you know, bounce your flak off walls at certain angles and stuff, which is a really cool mechanic. All right, gentlemen, thanks for your questions this week. We did have a lot of questions about Modern Warfare 2, of course, and the lack of dedicated server support. We just thought our conversation about it, I would attend to those. But please remember that we do need your questions, comments, and mini rants to fuel our podcast next week. Email us your thoughts in MP3 form to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com or give us a ring at 877-404-1337, extension 724, and leave a message no longer than 60 seconds, if you dare. All right, I guess that brings us to playlist for this week. Eric is not on the podcast this week, but we've been playing a ton of The Last Stand, the new survival mode for Dawn of War 2, and just having an amazing time with it. I've been playing Eldar, and Eric's been playing the Space Marine. My character is sort of like a support class. Like, I cast spells, I buff people, I confuse enemies and make them fight each other. Eric's kind of a direct damage dealer. He has a plasma pistol, lets him eliminate specific enemies and sort of hero enemies on the field. But there's just this wonderful pace to it where... So there's 20 waves in the game that you can encounter, and each wave is composed of, you know, a certain group of enemies that eventually gets more difficult. And because it's a three-player game, usually, you know, sort of sticking with the same group. Eric and I have been playing together and maybe bringing, you know, one or two new people in through our sessions. But you sort of say, you sort of hit this wall at a certain point where you can't get past, say, level, you know, wave 12 or wave 14, and you have to either level up over time to get some new gear to help you manage new strategies and employ some new tactics, or you just have to figure out how to do it together. And it's kind of this nice process of getting over these humps, so to speak. And I haven't gotten level 20 yet. I think the furthest we've gotten is level 16, Eric. But it's just been an absolute blast. I'm really enjoying just putting that game in a new context, that experience in a new context. It really just reminds me of the strength of the mechanics and the animations and the effects and the graphics. So it's been great. I'm going to play it more tonight. What about yourself, Prentice?
I've just been playing the original Monkey Island because I've been trying to get ideas for my Halloween costume because I'm going as Guybrush.
Oh, dude. It's a great idea.
Yeah. So you should go too.
Yeah, I'm afraid no one will know who I am, and it's just turned into a night of explaining.
Yeah.
Well, you could just, I mean, it would be one of those situations where, like, if your family asks, you'd be like, I'm a pirate. But if you're sort of gaming aware friends, you know.
Yeah.
Are you going to do the Guybrush rat tail?
I'll have to figure out a way to do that because my hair's not long. So,
as far as hairstyles go, are you going for the redone Guybrush in the special edition, or more?
No,
the classic,
I'm going for the OG.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I have to figure out whether to wear a vest or the he has like a new trench coat in the other ones, or just like the puffy shirt from the first one.
Yeah, cool. Well, we'll be sure to take multiple pictures of that and throw it on our Facebook page. Andy Bauman, what's on your playlist this week?
I put in like a bunch of hours in Red Faction Guerrilla over the weekend. And because, I don't know, I heard it was like a really cool game. And so it sounded compelling enough. And it's pretty awesome, I have to say. When I'm not playing it, it's for some reason it sticks in my head as like this like Lego simulator. Like I feel like I'm playing Lego the Planet or something. But then when I'm playing it, the graphics are a lot more high fidelity than that. But for some reason, like when I think about it, when I'm not in the game, it's like really low fidelity for some reason. I don't know why. I think maybe it has something to do with the world is kind of sparse, and the buildings are the only things that are interesting, and the fact that you can demolish them in a very satisfying way, but they're kind of like spread out in these like weirdly designed places. And there's no like city, if you will. But it's a pretty cool game so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not like GTA on Mars or anything like that.
Right, but maybe that's what I was expecting.
Sure.
But
sorry, I haven't played all the way through, but would you agree that sort of the best moments are those emergent moments where you are, you know, you're driving along, you encounter a base that's populated by enemies, and you just decide to take it down, you know, level it to the ground.
Oh, yeah. Like,
and not the missions.
That's basically the game itself. Part of the gameplay is there's these targets, and you have to take them down in order to, like, progress the game. So whether you're just running by it at a moment that you discover it and decide that's when I'm going to take it down, you pretty much have to take down these certain buildings. And so it is fun to just, like, for example, there's a mission where you get this huge walker at the end of the mission. And you're like, well, what am I going to do with this walker? And then all of a sudden you walk by this bridge, and it's like, oh, we need to take down that bridge. And you're like, oh, I cannot do that unless I have this walker. Like, it would take forever to do it with just the little explosives. So you just, like, start demolishing the bridge with your walker thing, and it's, like, super satisfying.
Nice. Yeah. You got to try to, I don't know if this is an omission, but one of the anecdotes the developer told me was, so with the walker, you can pick up vehicles and throw them, right?
Which is cool. I don't know. I haven't tried that yet.
Well, I guess. But on top of that, I would try to convince you to try to put mines on a vehicle, pick up that vehicle,
and then throw it. Oh, damn. Because, it, that's so good.
Because one of the simple tasks is you can put those proximity, or I guess they're remote mines.
There's both, yeah.
Yeah, on your vehicle, and just kind of drive in, jump out the door and roll and detonate it. But that kind of gives you an artillery option, maybe. All right, Gary. And I've seen you playing Zuma and hoping maybe you can reach my high scores on some of those levels. But
yeah, for some reason, we've decided to make Zuma into the game that we're trying to top each other in. Dan saw me playing it the other day and proceeded to try to out-ace me on some of the challenge levels. Yeah, it's really satisfying, Zuma. Other than that, besides Borderlands, interesting that you mentioned Red Faction, because I, on a whim, downloaded that.
Oh, cool.
Just this week, and I played through the beginning tutorial mission, had a lot of fun dismantling things, got to the point where I entered the first area where the story actually begins and just started hitting everything and was having fun just destroying everything. I've been meaning to get back to it and actually start playing it for real. Glad to hear
I
that.
I think you are playing it for real, it sounds like.
Well, that is one way of playing it. It keeps telling me that what my popularity has gone down. So I wasn't really paying attention. I stopped paying attention. I just started killing everybody and just hitting them with my hammer. I could see why it's fun, and I'm looking forward to getting into that.
The hammer is oddly satisfying. Like, usually I'm not down with melee weapons, but man, that hammer.
Yeah, but when your melee weapon could take down a high-rise building... It's not really just a melee weapon anymore.
It's not a defensive attack, yeah.
Another plug for Osmose. Sometimes I just put that on and put on my headphones and listen to the ambient music while I'm working. Yeah, but mostly Borderlands.
As we reach the end of another podcast this week, that means it's time for us to retreat back to our word minds and continue our work in making a magazine, to which you can subscribe by visiting pcgamer.com. But before we do, I want to remind you guys that Killing Floor, the six-player cooperative zombie shooter on Steam, is having a free play weekend beginning on Thursday, actually, a little bit early.
Wow.
As a way of introducing some new content. I haven't played it in several months, actually, since a review, and this is a great excuse for me to jump back on. I think we're going to be having a PC Gamer game night this weekend, and hopefully get some of you guys in Killing Floor and trading some swings with the fire axe and katana and shotgun and whatnot. And definitely encourage you guys to take a look at it if you haven't already. It's a blast. So for myself, Prentice Getty, Andy Bauman, and Gary Steinman, have a great week, and we'll see you next Thursday.
What smells peanut buttery? Andy, you smell that?
No. Just kind of smells like cat pee.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, no, cats are awesome. Don't be like that.
I love my two, cat.
If you have two, they kind of play with each other or whatever.
That's why PC Gamer is at its best when it has two interns, because they groom each other. They play with each other.
And then, like, you look over and they're kind of, like curled up next to each other.
Yeah,
sunlight, like, yeah.
Now and then they tussle, but it's so cute because their little paws are like hitting, whacking each other on the head. One of them's on the windowsill, the other one nudges them off, the other one off.
Throw them some yarn every so often.
This is too close to home.
We had a long talk about whether we could afford two interns, but then we said we can't afford not to have two interns because we can't always pay attention to them. So they need to pay attention to each other, and they don't get it as lonely when all the daddies and mommy are out of the office. Yeah, we use up all our Photoshop credits for the month when our art director has to, like, shave a few pounds off my chin, my neck block.
Is that how you divvy out your work? It's like, you can take 10 Photoshop credits?
Uh-huh.
Wow. I need to start implementing that. Cause I don't... All right, Evan, if you scribble one more time, that's 2 audio edits. You're down to 3 credits, so choose which one you want to take out.
It's a good system.
You should use the original. Oh, God.
It's bad.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Are you vacuuming?
I mean, there's like subspace distortion now. It's like you're broadcasting from Mars. Honestly.
It's like vacuuming his lawn or something.
Yeah.
So on your resume, did you neglect to mention that you emit like podcast killing fields or something?
Apparently,
magnetized.
Apparently, I did.
Yeah.
You should fart into the mic, Gary.
No, because that's crass. I mean, that's intern thinking.
I didn't mean for the podcast. I was just talking to in general.
Oh, okay. No, that's executive thinking. I'm sorry.